Okay, real talk. When did paying someone back become social media?
What do you mean?
Like, say I want to see what you're doing and who you're hanging with, and you're not posting about it on your story. I can just stalk your pay app and find out what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. You do that?
No, I don't do that. I use Apple Cash. It's built into your iPhone, easy and secure. You can send and receive money right in messages and keep it between friends, and then use that money to buy something at a store with Apple Pay.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Maybe.
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today we are so thrilled to be joined by a guest, despite technology coming in their way, trying to stop us at every turn. It won't stop us. We are so happy to be joined by author, journalist, podcaster, Meredith Goldstein. Welcome so much. Yay. Welcome so
Hello.
Much.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me reboot my computer 50 times before we started.
If that doesn't happen, then it's not a podcast. So
right. True.
And we know it's going to be a good episode when it has so many delays. We're just building it up yes. now.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. The anticipation. It's just, yeah.
It's palpable.
Yeah.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. So I have been the advice columnist at the Boston Globe for about 15 years, which is wild. And I've also written some books. One is about that and some fiction books. But I am originally basically from Maryland and moved to Boston and have been in Boston so long that I am starting to think like a Boston person, whatever that means. And that is my background. And I also host a podcast based on the advice column.
Yes. Love letters. And you cover so many interesting topics on there. And I'm very excited to get into this because honestly, I find advice columns and the history of them fascinating. And you have been doing this for a long time. How did you get into being an advice columnist?
Well, certainly I did not go to journalism school to be an advice columnist. I don't know what I really thought. I was going to be an arts writer and my parents were musicians. So I thought, oh, well, I can't play music well, but maybe I'll be a rock critic. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to go to shows and I don't want to go to shows I don't like. Our critic at the time took me to like a White Zombie concert and looked at me and said, and I was so miserable. And she said, if you don't like this, this job is not for you. So that was a really good lesson. And I was writing a lot of feature stories about the way we live, which we would have called like a living story of living arts. It's, you know, old school media talk, right? And at the time, I mean, this sounds so dated, but Facebook was new, at least new for non-college students. Texting. I mean, we were still on flip phones. We were in BlackBerry mode, I think. We were like coming into the smartphone era, and texting was much more something that you could do without it being rude to do that instead of call. Whereas like, of course, you know, in 2024, if somebody calls me, I'm like, what's wrong? Whereas right. like at that point, I'd be like, you're just going to text me and not call me. So it was just a completely different time. And I was writing a lot of stories about how technology was changing, how we interacted, how the rules had changed, how demographics had changed, all from that sort of feature perspective. And that led me into thinking, well, the globe is, you know, in a city that is deeply obsessed with itself. What if Boston had its own advice columnist? And of course, at that point, the internet was even newer. So it didn't occur to me that people were going to write in from all over, despite the fact that we were very much Boston. And same with the podcast. It's like, podcast listeners know I'm sitting in Boston, but they come from everywhere. And it's like, nice to know somebody's based somewhere, but we're all having the same discussions.
Yes.
And so basically it's just, you know, like people say, are you qualified to do this? Did you get a degree in this? I'm like, no, if I got a degree in this, I would be a therapist. Right. I would not be telling people what to do. And this is just a lot, you know, there's a big history in journalism of journalists on occasion becoming people who give advice. And it is I think it's like a nice snapshot of the world we live in. This is always the shtick I give to newspaper editors or media company editors who are like, why are we spending money on this? Why are we devoting any resources to this? Right. And I will tell them, if you want a time capsule of history, go to the advice column in whatever it was at the time, and you will get a sense of how people live, not just the news, but how they lived.
Yeah, we actually, not us, but previous hosts did a whole episode on Dear Abby, if I remember correctly, and just kind of the change and shift there was with her work. And how significant it really was, especially for women and the culture of women and what they were trying to figure out and who to ask, because there was so much shame in feeling like they may have failed in certain things, including love or family and all that. And being able to ask a stranger with a non-biased look was a phenomenon.
Well, it's also like when you talk about shame and gender, I would say only recently have I felt that advice columns are getting their due. So this is a thing in a media company that will get consistent readers that make people feel like they're part of a community. And even 10 years ago or so, or certainly when I started, it was like silly to some people. And I'm not saying it's the same as our Spotlight team after, you know, for which they made a movie about, right? But I am saying, we don't do this with sports, right? Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, as a non-sports person, every year a baseball team plays in Boston and they might win and they might lose and they might change their personnel, but it's the same and it's a hobby. And there is a financial world behind it that is deeply important, and people feel a spiritual loyalty in certain ways. And those are the reasons it's interesting. But I can say the same of advice columns and the industry of relationships. So why someone, an editor, might eye roll an advice column versus a sports column, there should be no difference, but there is, and that's because of gender and who traditionally is interested in this topic. But the good news is I feel like in the past 5 years or so, I think that has changed, where, you know, money talks. And, you know, let's be honest, like a demographic of buying people is women.
Surprise.
Right. Absolutely.
of a certain age. And suddenly it's like, well, everybody likes to make money and get audience. So suddenly, like, it's not the worst that, you know, it's like, oh, well, what if we don't belittle this? So we're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing that I found really interesting when I was reading up about you in the non-creepy work way is that and something you spoke to is, you know, we've struggled with this too. Sometimes you feel like, oh, I'm not qualified to do something. And I know when you like pitched the idea, you were going through sort of a rough time in your life of, you know, going through breakup yourself. And I thought it was interesting. It was a quote from your memoir, I believe, about your friend saying, you know, when people look down on the grief you feel when you have a breakup, like people don't take that very seriously. But it is a real pain. And I thought it was sort of a profound thing of, it's someone choosing not to have you in their life anymore. And that is really painful. So how have people outside given you advice that has maybe shaped what you've done? And just how have you come to terms with, you know, sometimes it's hard to take your own advice. Sometimes you might not have the answer.
I think the readers and the letter writers themselves have taught me so much, because we're not supposed to know the answers all the time. And we're also not supposed to tell people what to do, which is, I think, really important to say, because even though I'm an advice columnist and I am more likely to give a definitive, what if you tried this? When we give advice in our real lives, we should not say, do this. If you are saying that to a friend or family member, a loved one, do this, you are doing it wrong. And it's so much about listening and asking questions and helping someone get to a conclusion and telling them what you might notice in them and how they're prioritizing sharing information or not sharing information. And you're never going to escape that process when you're making a difficult decision or dealing with change. So I think it's I had to accept pretty quickly in this that I've never been married. I have been dumped. I've never been a parent. That does not mean I can't help people who are going through things that I've never been through, and vice versa. You talk about Dear Abby, you know, Ann Landers, her sister, which they notoriously did not get along. And I'm an Ann Landers girl for a number of reasons, one of which is that I'm friends with her daughter, who also became an advice columnist. But she was married like four times. And so you could say, well, you kept getting a divorce. What do you know? Mm-hmm. What do you know about? But her experiences shape her how she sees the world. And I've always seen that as this is a person who knew when to leave. Mm-hmm. And this is a person, you know, I think when you're younger or when you haven't thought about it a lot, you're sort of thinking, oh, well, success looks like this. Failure looks like this. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I had to take out of the equation, that there is no relationship failure. There's no, certainly you can fail someone, but there's no one doing it right and doing it wrong. And there's absolutely no one who doesn't have to ask a lot of questions. So I think the readers, in asking their questions, even when they're so smart, know exactly what to do, the processing of it, I'm like, oh, well, I'm allowed to process it too. And they have made me much, have a lot more confidence about, well, I'm going to try this in my own life. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll all be okay. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Well, you were talking earlier about like texting and the internet when you first started. I saw recently you wrote a piece on AI and like what's going on there. So how, over the length of time you've been doing this, how have you seen the landscape change?
It's so radical in terms of the difference. First of all, back in the day, it would have been rude to ask somebody out by text 15 years ago. Like, that would have been weird, and you wouldn't even be sure that the text got there. But like 10 years ago, it might have been rude. Once again, like, now it seems invasive to make phone calls unless that's something scheduled ahead of time. There's almost like a consent needed of like, what if I called, you know, and certainly FaceTime. And I remember the first letter I received from someone who had met someone by sliding into their DMs on Instagram. We did not call it that then. They were like, they messaged me on Instagram. And I was like, what a weird stalkery thing to do. Like, I was just like floored by the idea that some stranger would enter your direct messages in your social media account. Now that's like, obviously, right? Like this is a thing that happens. I am often asked when I talk to people, is all of this technology good or bad? Like there's this black and white way of thinking about, has it improved our lives or made our lives terrible? And of course it's middle, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, when my late mother was younger and single after her divorce, she could have used internet, mm-hmm. like in the world, to find people outside of her own community. She didn't have that. We didn't have that. Mm-hmm. So the minute there were online dating websites, her world got so much bigger and so much less lonelier, you know, just to know what else was out there. On the other hand, sometimes I'm sitting in a bar and everybody's on their phones and I'm like super bummed about the lack of like paying attention mm-hmm. that we do. So it's both, but it is, I would never say it's bad. And I would also say that I would take the bigger world, even despite all the catfishing, despite all the nonsense. It's like nonsense in a different place. Dating is hard. It's going to be nonsense wherever you go, but you're kind of looking for those great experiences, whether it's at a crowded bar, party, on a website, on an app. It's like kind of all just looking for needles in haystacks. So we might as well have different options.
Right. Like the methods have changed, but the results are similar.
The results kind of are similar. And I think the perception is similar too. Like people romanticize these organic meet cutes, right? That you see in movies of running into, and like, I will always say to people, like, what are the odds? What are the odds that you're going to meet someone on an app that you like? Mm-hmm. If you do, that is the most romantic thing I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
The happenstance of that is incredible. And it is basically the equivalent of an Anne Hathaway character getting into a cab and somebody getting in from the other, or Meg Ryan character, like getting in from the other side. And you're like, ooh, we're sharing a cab now. Like that is the same level of, I can't believe this happened. Whereas like meeting somebody through a friend is actually like kind of obvious to me. Right. Like it might happen, it might not. But when people get worried about the narratives of how they met, I'm like, app dating is like so complicated that if something comes from that, that's amazing. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I always think about how people don't understand the greater, not risk, but you're taking a little more of a gamble when you do put yourself out there with an intention versus just happenstance of like, oh, okay, this might work. Like, yes. We have a few things in common. Okay, I'm so-and-so, you're friends with so-and-so. You know, like, it's a little different. But with all of that, obviously, you have a plethora of questions and stories and so many things, I'm sure, under your belt and in your mind. Are there any stories that stand out to you?
The stories that stand out tend to be from the podcast, because unlike the letters where it's a letter and I kind of can't see the person and that's probably for the best and they're anonymous, these people in the podcast tell these entire stories from start to finish. And I love the breakup stories because often the breakup story is the greatest story ever told to me. I think that's supposed to be the Bible. And there are probably breakup stories in the Bible, but I'm going to say any breakup story is because often it is loss and then rising like a phoenix. It always, mm-hmm. there's this hopeful other side of it that should be there. And if it isn't there, we will find it. Right. And so those are the stories that stick with me about someone telling their story of letting go mm-hmm. and then finding something else. I am particularly interested right now, and I think everybody's interested in it, in a conversation about polyamory that everybody's having, I think, in the media of like, oh, here's this thing, which, by the way, has existed for a really long time and has been practiced for a really long time. And according to all of these media companies, you know, you would think that everyone is in a polyamorous relationship and that it's new.
Yeah, right.
But I've had people on the podcast talk about, well, what does that experience look like? Mm. And that's really important to me because it can be really confusing and ambiguous for others, but there are lessons from it that can help us navigate our boring monogamous, our basic monogamous relationships. Like, and I think that's important. So I think for me right now, it's like the stories on the podcast of like, I'm not even answering the question. These people are answering the questions for me where I'm like, how are you doing this? And what have you learned from it? Actually, we've got an episode of the podcast coming up unrelated to polyamory that is about sports significant others, mm-hmm. the wives of famous athletes. And this is something living in Boston where I'm like, where athletes are truly celebrities. And we'll talk about the Red Sox wives. The Red Sox wives attended a fashion show. Like they're like a like this group that moves around in one pack. And I've always thought like, how do you keep your identity? Like, do you like that? Do you like being called that? I don't know. Maybe they, you know, and talking to some of these people, we talked to someone who is a basketball wife and someone who is a baseball wife. And the story they actually tell is about how to find your own spotlight, how your partner can help you do that, and how to let your partner have the spotlight, and how you share. And anybody can learn from that. Right. So I was surprised at how much I related to these experiences that are nothing like my own.
Right.
Yeah. And it is true. We've had that on here so many times. I remember we did an episode, two-parter on BDSM, and I left like, oh gosh, I can learn so much from
right. this community. Like, oh, okay, you're doing this right. We need to learn this. Yeah. We're not a part of the BDSM.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh my God. One of my first stories at the Globe, and maybe this led me into the work that I do too, was that people in a smallish town city in southern Massachusetts had been arrested at a BDSM party for assault. Basically, from my memory, law enforcement went in there, saw people looking aggressive with each other, and thought bad stuff was going on. Of course, this was all consensual and part of a community. And then, of course, it was this public shaming of, well, who was there? Who got arrested? No. Who was assaulting, I put that in air quotes, other people? And I met with this group after, and they told me all about their lifestyle. I remember one of the things they did was they were showing me sex toys versus things they bought at Home Depot, and I could absolutely not tell the difference. It was just really, I was probably a 25-year-old reporter at the time, and it was, or maybe, you know, I might have even been younger. This might have even been when I was still working in Providence. But all these stories led me to be really interested in different lifestyles and how people like to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have a general idea of how general topics like shake out in terms of frequency? Like, I think I read somewhere that you at one time snooping was the big thing people were like writing it about. Do you have an idea about what's going on?
So, yeah, in the beginning when I started the column, everybody was snooping. Everybody who wrote in was like, I checked my significant other's texts or email or whatever.
I was about to ask the definition, like, what is snooping?
Yeah, like they would like, Snoopy? Like get the code to their partner's phone and read texts. They would, you know, this is less frequent now. There are a few reasons, I think, for this, my guess. One is that we have better security. So there's like a two, you know, factor authentication, like it's just harder to break into people's stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I am absolutely someone whose cell phone, like code to get in is my birthday. So everybody, you know, I'm like, who does that? And then I'll be like, it's just amazing to me where I'm like, oh, like this dummy, like has their birthday. And that's exactly what I chose, but I kind of have nothing to hide, but,
at least it's not 111. So
exactly. But kind of, but you know, for me, it's like 1111. Yeah. So I think it's harder to do, but the other thing I think is that we are able to track each other in other ways that we weren't before. So mm-hmm. like, there's too much information. There's like, okay, there are certain people on social media who might make note of where they are, what they're eating and who they're with throughout a day. So I think there's this thought of, well, I'm probably going to know anyway, or maybe it's the absence of information that is making me not trust this person, not information. It's like, well, where were you from 7 to 9? There was no like Instagram story then. There was no reel then. So I think it's just like, and I think people are exhausted and snooping is hard. I mean, it still happens, but it's not with the frequency. Like I felt like every letter writer back then was like, I did this. And then it became this conversation of like, which is worse, right? The fact that you snooped, finding whatever you found.
Right.
I'm assuming there were so many people who did snoop and found nothing that never wrote to me. So I just feel like it was probably pretty like a systemic problem in society at the time. Now I think, you know, dating fatigue was happening before COVID. Mm-hmm. So like right before COVID, everybody was like, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep doing, like, I am doing this. It feels like work. It feels like a job. I feel like when I'm not swiping, I'm missing my soulmates. But when I am swiping, I'm not seeing my soulmates. And I it is this labor and it's exhausting. And then COVID happened and it was obviously this like tragedy around the world. And yet I would hear from people who'd be like, well, at least I am given permission to just sit with this. And everybody who's single is just going to be single right now. And everybody who's not is not. And I also think it gave single people a chance to really think about what it would feel like to be coupled or have partners at all in that moment. I mean, I was somebody who in 2020 was single and living alone, was like, oh my God, like people would call and be like, are you okay? You're alone. And I'm like, yeah, I'm alone. It's so hard with my TV and my kettle corn that got delivered to me. And my, I mean, I was very lucky. Right. I remained employed. I was doing work, but I was not lonely and I felt bad for everyone else. It also felt like the safest thing that I, you know, I felt incredibly privileged to live alone and not have to, you know, worry about anybody coming. So then it was the COVID era of, I know my husband's going to the grocery store without a mask. I know it. And like those letters where it was just negotiating safety, negotiating, you know, who do we allow someone to come over who's not vaccinated? Do we like letters about really, really complicated negotiations. And I remember asking a sex writer about this because the negotiation of polyamory and open relationships and just consent in general could be useful all of a sudden in conversations about who do we let in the house? What do we tell each other? What is the protection we need? Like it felt parallel in these weird ways. Mm-hmm. Now, I think people are just tired and confused. And sometimes they're really happy, but they're like, I don't have to do anything any particular way.
Yeah.
Not everybody feels that way, but a lot of people do. So like, that's amazing. But it also brings up, well, then what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. You know, like, do I want to get married? Do I want to be looking? I think we're not going to know for a long time what this pandemic did to us emotionally, but I think for a lot of people, it reset their obligations. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly we saw that with people quitting jobs, with people moving, but I think in relationships, it was like, well, you know, this was following a path for a reason. And what if everything just got like put into an etch-a-sketch and like shaken up?
I mean, yeah, I think the pandemic really showed a lot of people that either you're really great at being alone and this is fine, or you're really suffering and you have to fix things immediately when you can. So I feel like it definitely like highlighted what is something that you can and can't do. For me, I figured out I really like being alone. We don't need to talk.
Yeah, I mean, and ironically, like I started seeing someone after that, after realizing I like to be alone, you know, you got to mess things up once you realize.
What do I have to be? Let's try this.
Right.
which I like. You know, and I think it's really interesting because as you've been doing this for a while now and you've changed even yourself, your medium a little bit. I know you're doing both still, but like coming from writing and printing to podcasting and having conversations with people and getting a bigger view and a bigger like stories, I guess. Do you feel like, I will say, like, as a podcaster, I came from, like, one field to this field and feeling like I'm learning so many different things that I'm like, ooh, this is a different perspective. Okay, I'm going to learn it this way. I'm going to take this in. Do you feel like some of these things have helped you personally or changed your perspectives?
My perspective is, like, yes. especially, you know, with the podcast, like, I mean, I don't even know. I think when I started the column, I had a pretty big chip on my shoulder about being single. Like I chose it. I mean, it's not like a zillion people were asking to be my significant other, but it felt like I also knew I wasn't trying,
right.
But it felt like a lifestyle choice. And it felt like one, and I think this is a common thing to feel when other people are coupling up all around you, where I was like, I'm doing it on my own. I went to IKEA by myself. I pay for it, but like I'm figuring out a way to do this and it feels important. Mm-hmm. And it was, but there was a level of bravery I attached to it and it is real, but I was discounting the bravery of my friends who were coupled or in whatever relationship they were in. As I got older and talked to more people and did more of the column. And then with the podcast, I saw how much negotiation that took and how much self-awareness it took and how much accountability it took. When you're really kind of only accountable to yourself and to the people around you when you see them. Mm-hmm. and not in a partnered relationship. Right. It's fine and it's great and it does take bravery to do that. But after a while, you get really good at it. And I took no bravery at all. It was like, it felt, again, COVID taught me that. I was like, this is so deeply easy that maybe I could challenge myself. Right. And I think I would not have that perspective if it weren't for the column and the podcast.
Yeah,
I love that.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. Well, speaking of the podcast, let's talk about that for a second. You've also been doing that for a while. What made you decide to take these letters and try doing it in podcast form?
Well, this was interesting. So I would say I did not. I did not. The owner of the Globe was like, can you make this a podcast too? That seems to be a thing.
Oh,
and
I
was
relate.
Like, I don't want to just, right? I was like, okay. But I did not listen to podcasts really. And I did not want to do just let's talk about a letter because I, you know, Cheryl Strayed was doing that. And I was like, she's famous. Like, I didn't want to do a thing that somebody else was doing in a way that already existed and existed well. And also I didn't know that I had that much more to say about the letters in particular than what I had answered. But I did miss as a journalist interviewing people. And I remember saying, as somebody who was not listening to podcasts, had never listened to Serial, saying to the people at the Globe, I want to be the Serial of breakups. And they said, what does that mean? And I said, I don't even know, because I had not listened. I knew what it was. Yeah. But what I said to them was, I want to have people tell their own stories mm-hmm. that can help other people. And every season, I want to have a theme. And that is what we've done so far. And they're short seasons with one theme. So the first season was breakups. And I was like, I want people to be able to listen to 8 episodes and have it as a handy guide that they can tune into whenever they get dumped or break up with somebody. And that whole season, it was people telling stories. You know, we had one story I loved about a woman whose ex-boyfriend was following her, still connected to her on Venmo, and talk about technology, and had driven himself into a panic watching what she was paying people for. Shows up at her doorstep and is like, I know you have a new boyfriend. I can't deal with it. And she's like, I don't. And long story short, she's in a running club and was paying somebody every Sunday for like the egg sandwich she had after the run. The guy who brought the credit card when he ran. But it was like that in that episode, it was the lesson about like, well, let's be careful of the stories we tell right. and the narratives we tell as we try to get over this, because we can get to a place where we're like, oh no, everything's falling apart. And like, this person has already moved on and I was never important to them. And that wasn't the case, obviously. But through these stories, Yeah, like I feel like it's a pretty good, it goes from, well, do you have to get under someone to get over someone? Like that's episode one to, I believe, what our finale was about, like, can you be friends with someone? How can you be friends with someone after a breakup? When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? And the next season was about how to meet someone. And the next season was about how do you know, some of these bigger questions. And we had a season about money. So where, you know, one of my favorite episodes is someone talking about their husband's secret $30,000 of credit card debt and how they survived that. And what was amazing was I said, oh, it's only $30,000. And the person said, that tells me a lot about you. Which is not that I have $30,000 to pay off a credit card debt, but the fact that I wasn't, my thought was at least it's not $100,000. And they were like, how much credit card debt do you have? But it's so interesting, you tell on yourself, right? Where I'm like, oh, well, $30,000 you could probably get at over the course of your life. Whereas like for $200,000, maybe, I don't know. It was really, it exposed doing that season, like even our producers, like how we felt about money. Mm-hmm. By the way, the person, it is, the first episode of that season, and part of the $30,000 of credit card debt was LARPing paraphernalia purchased.
Was it Annie? Annie was.
Oh, no.
So it's never what you think, right? Where yeah. I was like, is it, what was it? Was it? And then it was like, well, a sword, an elf costume. It's like, but another episode from that season was about a woman tells us, two people tell a story about why getting a prenup was the most romantic thing they ever did. Hmm. And they talk about their courtship and just like, now they have, they both come from, you know, pasts where there was trust broken. And now they basically can show up every day saying we could leave at any moment and be okay. We would be okay. Which means that when we show up every day, it's because we want to, it's not because we have to. And they really get into that. And so like, I have found that the best advice does not come from me at all. It's just like me asking these people how they got there to whatever conclusion they got to. So yeah. So that with the podcast, like I would have never thought, you know, in 2018, when we started it, that it would become like my precious gem of like the work I do. Yeah. And you would probably not be surprised, but then you're like, oh, you get to hear people and they tell you these things. And then you get to apply those things to your life. So I'm really grateful that, you know, the owner said, go do this thing, because then I got to go do that thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you an extrovert? Because I feel like, I don't know, Meredith, because you sound like me, but then also not me.
I'm not an extrovert. Okay. I am a extroverted introvert, yeah, or something like, yeah, that. I mean, I but I need to power down a lot.
You're an ambivert. Is that what that is?
Yeah. I, when I'm on, I'm on. And I have a friend who says, you've always got 2 hours in you. And then it's just, the button is, then we're done. Then we're, okay, done. And actually, that's actually probably great for recording podcasts, where, yeah, the lead up and the coming the down of that, and then we're done. Yeah.
So you got about 30 more minutes with you, huh? I'm just kidding. Right. We're going to use it up before your next one. We're like, yeah, we did it. Sorry. You can't have it just because we did.
Right.
I asked this because it sounds like me as well. Like, I love being alone, but these conversations are amazing, and I want, yeah, to have these conversations because they do teach you so much. I joked when I first started podcasting about how I'm just here to make friends because I'm alone.
Yeah.
This is like, I'm going to make friends, right, like make them be, yeah, my friend by talking to me for an hour,
yeah,
about all of their knowledge. Like, that's the way I feel like it. And you know, it sounds like, again, we have a similar, you and Annie more so than me, because I forced myself on to a podcast. That's where she was told to do a podcast as well. But how has this podcasting world been treating you so far?
I mean, I doing the podcast and having to do some navigating about like what that world is has also been wonderful. And it's interesting. I don't listen to podcasts generally. They're a lot like mine. I'm a big rewatcher of shows, of the shows I love. And so this idea that there are podcasts out there that are, and I tend not to love the ones with the stars of the show rewatching. I'm not really interested in that. What I want to know is like, I listen to a Vampire Diaries podcast, called The Empire Diaries, AMP. And that was like my parasocial relationship, like during 2020, where, you know, it's like women who are a lot younger than me experiencing a show I experienced when, yes, I was older than them. And like, or I listened to a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast, Slayer Fest 98, where they're just like going, and now they're going through The Magicians, right? Yeah. And I'm like, okay, like, so I have found the world as a listener to, it's like, what a cure for loneliness, to just hear people who could be your friends talking. I mean, I know there's some parasocial weirdness with that too, but whatever, it's fine. And I'm sure people have that with my podcast and people have it with your podcast, certainly, right? Of like, these are my friends and now, and I know them and in some ways they're right. And, but that's the part of it I really like of just, I think you don't get that necessarily always with a column or with something you read, but there's, no matter the format, like, so it's been nice to be on both sides of that as both a listener of podcasts and a maker of one.
Now I have to ask, and I feel like this is going to be an obvious question, so please don't hate me, because there was an article that popped up about you being the actual Carrie Bradshaw, and have done a full-on rewatch of Sex and the City, and we also did laugh about the fact that she jumped from the newspaper to podcasting world herself, and of course, her podcasting world is like, that's radio.
Well, so I have my biggest professional sin is that I have not watched the reboot, and I will one day. I was waiting for a really big snowstorm in Boston, and then it never happened. So it's funny because if you Google my name and Carrie Bradshaw, there's one headline that's like, she's the Carrie Bradshaw of Boston. And the next headline is, she's no Carrie Bradshaw. And of the two, I think number two is, I hope I'm no Carrie Bradshaw. I rewatched that show and I'm like, what a selfish, weird person.
Right. And she's actually the villain.
She is a villain. And I remember they sent me to do a preview of the movie, the first movie. Yeah. And so I got to interview all of these stars, right? And I remember Sarah Jessica Parker saying, I would be scared to death of this person. Like, she said to me, like, I am not this person.
Right.
And she actually said that of all of them, Kristen Davis, her lifestyle was the most like Carrie Bradshaw in that I think at that point she was single. She's like, listen, I'm married to Matthew Broderick and I have kids and I like I am not, this is a person I can't access and I might be frightened of her. And that made me feel a little better. But yeah. And that was actually, I think I did that story maybe even before I was writing the column. But yeah, no, that's not it. I hope, but I think, you know, media comes back around again, right? You love it. And then you're like cringed, like it's super cringy. And then you come back to it and you say, you know what, the episode where she registers for shoes is pretty great.
Right.
Because I remember being in that moment of, I can't keep celebrating everybody else all the time.
Right.
And I have heard, right, that her, of course, she goes to a podcast, right? Which is great.
Which is where I was like, oh, yeah, of course. They jumped into this. And I'm like, but look, I guess it happens more after.
Listen, I have been shown clips of her reading, like, ads. And I have read an ads before, which is like a luxury to read an ad,
right?
In some ways. But it is that I have enjoyed that clip. I hope I am an Ann Landers of Boston in new media. You think about how old, and not a Carrie Bradshaw. Although it is amazing. On some episodes, I will say, I can't help but wonder. And, you know, we'll say, oh, I couldn't help but wonder. Or I have an ex-boyfriend who used to do impressions of that show, and he would just say, meanwhile, downtown. That was it. That was the whole impression. But he'd only heard it in the background. And he'd say, meanwhile, Samantha was going uptown.
Yes. And this is where I'm like, I feel like we need to have you back on, because that's what we do. Part of what we do is to do a rewatch. And sometimes we have guests. I'm like, I want to have you on as a guest, because I need you to know that, we need the like, what the hell is this?
I have read romance novels about advice columnists, which I love, because they're always like some weird thing of, oh, like you fall in love with your letter writer. And like, that's never happened. Oh, yeah, there was, I will try to find it. But I always want to know, like, what are the depictions of advice columnists? I rewatched original Charmed not long ago. And, you know, Phoebe becomes an advice columnist.
That's right.
And then dates the publisher of her newspaper.
Does he talk
who
about
is
people?
Eric Dane or whoever. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. But I love that too, right? And I love that she's doing it on a show that I adore but makes no sense. But because she's an empath, because she has like a magical empathic ability to sense what people need to hear. So I love fictional depictions of advice givers. They are hilarious.
Yeah, for us, it's like watching podcasters, and we're like, that's not podcasting.
Because we don't get to criticize stuff like that often, but I like it when I'm finally able to be the one that's like, that's not how it works.
I mean, I'm not caught up with Only Murders in the Building, but I do remember something in that first season of somebody in a closet. Yeah. And I was like, well, at least they're in a closet. Yeah. At least they're like, right. Like, we know this to be the case, yes. Right? Especially yes. Of that era of like, we're just going to be surrounded by our suits and shirts. Right. And so literally. I like it when they show that.
Cosplay yeah. Behind Annie. Right. But yes, literally, that's what I was thinking about in Only Murders in the Building is because they do that. And then they come out to the stage. And I'm like, wait, what? They had it right.
Yeah.
And then they decided to perform. I guess a lot. And I think podcasting has changed because we're still in the closet. But I've seen a right. Lot of the like other podcasters being all out in couches, being comfy. And I was like, how can I get there? I want to.
Well, it is, you know, these. I have a friend who is much more into visual podcasts where there's like a set.
Yeah.
And they are watching this on YouTube. And I think a lot about that. She would always talk to me about my basement and say, like, we could renovate it to be the set. I'm like, the set of what? Right. Like, I never thought that I could be like lying back in a couch and being like, let me tell you, because it's not the format of what I do.
Right.
It's so edited. Right. So it's, but I get it. But yes, the closet feels real. I am. We are all still in the closet. No double meaning.
In the closet right now.
Yeah.
But with all of that, I'm sorry, I had to go into tirade because there were so many good things. But did you have a learning curve from switching over to print to this digital media?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The biggest thing, which you have both experienced intimately now, maybe the listener will not know, is that I have really bad allergies. And I blow my nose a lot. So really what this is not something that can be helped, but I suppose maybe with the right medication it could. But I think even just treating my voice better, you know, like I am not Adele and I am not like, oh, my voice is an instrument and I need to hydrate. But actually, as it turns out, you do need to kind of take care of yourself. And I would record something and the producer would say, this sounds terrible. And I'd be like, well, I stayed up really late and I had a glass of wine and I didn't drink water. So really just also to start with realizing that it does matter, mm-hmm. Even if you're not, you know, doing a Vegas show, you are going to be listened to. Mm-hmm. You know, it is really being present with interviews, despite a lot of other stuff. I am much more likely to notice that a refrigerator is buzzing.
Mm.
I am not a big sound person. Now I think about it. In fact, I highly recommend, I don't know if you've seen the documentary, The Greatest Night in Pop on Netflix. It's about the making of We Are the World, We Are the Children.
Oh.
And it's wild. It is a wild documentary about how they put this together and how you have all these egos in a room. How do you keep them not fighting? And it's like over the night, their BO gets worse and they start to like go a little berserk. It's a very funny, great documentary. But my favorite part is when Cyndi Lauper is like, are people laughing at me? And what she's hearing is her bracelets
Wow.
in the mic. She's hearing like and of course, now as somebody who does a podcast, I'm like, oh, like I'm very aware of, does somebody have, mm-hmm. is somebody, mm-hmm. If you can't see right now, I am hitting some people talk with their hands and they hit their legs. Mm-hmm. So that's really where I'm just thinking more like a producer, yeah. But these are not something, but it's the same thing, right? Of like, we used to not have to worry about social media. We just like wrote a column and somebody hit publish, but right. Now it's like, well, who's going to see it? And how are they going to see it? And who's going to respond to it?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, well, I have to say, as someone who has listened to Serial, you did what you wanted to do. You've accomplished being the Serial of breakups.
I didn't get somebody out of jail. I didn't get like a yeah. new trial for somebody, but you know.
Yeah, you know, it sounds great. I love it. The theme, it sounds like the theme this season is focusing kind of on like supporting characters almost, like friends or exes or therapists. Can
yeah.
you talk about that and why that was important to you?
I wanted to do a season about help. I mean, the whole thing is about help, right? The whole podcast. But I wanted to talk about where we get help so that we know where to look for it. You know, learning from other people about like, obviously a therapist might be able to help or, but I want to know how, and I also want to know when it's not helpful. And so I did a call out for people like, what are your stories of help and who helped you or what helped you? And, you know, the answers I got were, some of them were expected. Some of them were unexpected. You know, we just did most of our episodes, probably about more than half are not local, they're more national. But I did ask the governor of Massachusetts if she would be on, because she is our first elected woman governor, but she's also the first lesbian governor in the country. And she has a very public, romance for that reason. Her partner, people are interested. People are mean about it. People are nice about it. But they're nosy about it in a way that is totally understandable. In a way, like, I can't tell you very much about the past partners of governors in my state, maybe like one or two, but like, this is something I think about. Also because I am aging into her age group. Like, she's in her 50s, I'm in my 40s, right? So I was like, I want to know what it's like to be like the first lesbian Massachusetts governor, you know, what, and her, so who helps them? Her answer was music. It wasn't a person, it wasn't a thing. They go to a lot of shows. They are big Brandi Carlile fans. They do like the Indigo Girls. We did joke about that. But I, you know, for one person, our second episode of the season, it was a guy who was supposed to have an arranged marriage. And the help was his dad being like, oh, you're probably not going to do that, I guess. And it like changed the course of his life. Mm-hmm. His dad sort of giving him casual permission to not assume that had to happen. And now what? Like, now he can do, now his whole life is different. So one person talks about getting help from an ex. And so I really wanted to say, well, like, there's so much negativity, right? Like, all the people who make life difficult for us and all the things, the institutions, the financial issues that make life difficult for us, who's helping? What is helping? And I've learned a ton. So in the case of this episode, these episodes with the athletes' wives, I wanted to know who helps them. And I got some interesting answers.
Yeah. I love that. And I think something we've been talking about throughout this is, as you said, your column, your podcast, it's people all over who are reading it or listening to it, who are commenting and writing in. And that can be like a really lovely thing. I know you've talked about after your mom died, you kind of reached out and getting these answers from them. My dad died during the podcast and I talked about it and I got these amazing answers. And it's incredibly lovely. There's also the dark side of trolls, which I know you've talked about as well. So what has been your experience with sort of this like beautiful part and this ugly part?
It's weird, right? And it's changed so much. I think I had less troll issues in the beginning, or people who, even when they were being trolly, they didn't think, they weren't trying to be trolly. Again, it's sort of like that question of, is online dating, is app dating good or bad? I'm like, it's everything, right? And so you're going to get people who are truly using this connection we all have to be miserable. And sometimes it is because they truly believe they have something to say and that the world has gone wrong for them. And then you have other people who want to use it to connect. And like, and then now we have this issue where they might not even be real people. So like that's something new where like the troll might be like a bot coming from some other place, you know? And so it's really hard. And all I would tell people is like, you may need to limit, like you have to make that choice, right? Do I read the comments today? And every now and then I am delighted by the comments, not just on my column, but on stories. Recently, our most famous sports columnist had to have heart surgery and he's on medical leave. And we had to report about it because then we had to say, like, why is this person suddenly absent? And he's very controversial in Boston because he'll say mean things about sports teams or whatever he does. You know, I'm not a sports person. I don't know. I love the guy. Don't know what he's talking about. But I was so afraid when I clicked on the comments, and I did click on the comments. And then some people were like, I can't stand him. I hope he's feeling okay.
Like, that was not the way I thought it was going to go.
No, it was like, I hate him and I miss reading, I miss hating everything he said. And then it would be like, I love him, you know? And it was this moment of hate or love this guy. He is a part of my ritual. And for his sake and my sake, I can only wish this person the best. And I think also like when you deal with health, it's like, no, most people don't wish that on each other. Yeah. But it was a moment where I was like, wow, look at the world not being terrible. And so, but it was a choice. I knew clicking on that thing, I was like, why am I doing this? Do I want to do this? I don't know. And I was delighted. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just this self-regulation and self-protection of like, when do you want to risk it?
Right.
If you're not seeing what you want to see, you don't have to keep looking. and you can move on to the next thing.
It's difficult. We've had our struggles for sure.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp-to-hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. Well, you also are an author.
Yes.
Yes, you've done a diverse, so you've done like a memoir, you have young adult books. So can you talk about that, your works, and how that has been doing all these different things?
Yeah, I've written two young adult books. And I think that's because, like, I think when you're dealing with relationship issues, you think about like a lot of the topics of young adult books. And it's like, there's a lot of young adult books about death of parents and big relationships ending and illness, right? You think about the era of The Fault in Our Stars. And I remember doing a story for the Globe about like, well, like, you know, what is this about? And it's like, well, if a lot of the authors are approaching middle age or are middle age, like this is the stuff they're dealing with in their lives, sick parents, life changes. And like, you're not allowed at like 40, whatever, to do like a primal scream that often, at least not publicly, right? Because you're a grown up and you deal. But as a teenager, you can. And you forget that as an adult, you still have firsts. You have your first loss of a loved one, perhaps, if you haven't already. And I think for me, writing two stories about breakups and grief, you know, losing a loved one because they died, and also losing relationships or finding relationships, like the voice seemed really fun to be able to say, like, well, at 17, I could really scream this out in a way that I am doing now, but just no one is seeing it. So, so those are the, you know, and the last one is Things That Grow, which was really, you know, my first young adult book pretends to be a book about love that is really about the death of a parent. And my second book pretends to be about the death of a grandparent, but is really about love and romance. So Things That Grow is not a bummer despite being about a grandparent dying. But the memoir was also like the Globe's idea. They wanted in the same way they wanted a podcast, they wanted a love letters book. And the publisher said, we don't want a compilation, that everything's free online. So we want a memoir. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not that, I got nothing to say. But then of course you sit down and you do. Mm-hmm. So it was gave me the chance to talk about, well, here's what I was doing while I was pretending I had answers for people. Mm. You know, my mom was dying. I was going through a breakup. I was feeling really grateful for my friends. I was watching them date. I was evaluating my mom's life in a different way. And then matching that with the letters that corresponded to those experiences, which I think, you know, I hadn't even realized how much they were linked.
I have to say, I'm connecting so much to you right now. We also wrote a book that was not our idea. It was great.
I love when things aren't your idea, because then if it's somebody else's idea, you're like, well, if it doesn't work, it was their idea. Right.
This is on them. This is what they wanted.
This
Moving on.
Is all.
Right. Their idea. Not my idea. Yeah. But you know, therapeutic to do, for
right.
sure.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, again, we would love to have you back. Clearly, there's so much we could talk about, because we could talk so much about pop culture. But before you come back, I did want to end with a question, because we're about to watch Twilight.
Oh my God,
watched Twilight. How dare you? We're about to watch the second one.
Okay, so we've got someone who knows about it and someone who never has.
Okay.
I don't know anything about it. So I'm just like, give me some some advice, some thoughts.
So years ago, I took a class, or I shadowed a class at Harvard about vampires. And there was a scholar who linked the portrayal of vampires at different eras to the political landscape, the financial landscape. Like, if vampires were portrayed as hot and sexy, this was going on in the world. If they weren't, this was going on in the world. All very smart stuff. Here's what I know. I did really fall for Twilight during the last recession in 2000, whatever, right? In what was 7, 8, whenever it started to come out. So maybe there is something about that. But I also just think that Robert Pattinson is a really attractive man. and I think that New Moon, which you are going into, is also a testament to the movies just being entertaining, because he's not in a lot of it for reasons. And then he is. It is a movie that made me want to go to Italy, and I had never really thought about it. It is a movie. It is a beautiful piece of film. Criterion Collection, pick up the phone. And I just think you're really going to enjoy yourself. And I think you should let yourself have that.
This
is fascinating, because it goes back to what you were talking about before, where things like come back around, you know?
Yes.
Because
yes.
Because
I'm remembering one other thing, which I want to tell you, which is that in that era, I would watch all the director's commentaries for these movies. And I remember the director of New Moon saying that Robert Pattinson looked bad when he was kissing. So they shot any kissing from Kristen Stewart's, like her face would be face to the camera. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very conscious now of that when I watch any film with Robert Pattinson, where I'll be like, does he look weird when he's kissing? Like, it was just such an interesting director thing to say, where he was like, it looked better. It's actually a delightful director's commentary too, just about music and
yeah.
Well, you wrote about the gender swapped one too, right?
Which
the Twilight gender swap.
Yes.
So that would be, do we still have, that was for, I think we still have the original.
I don't know.
In that, yeah.
I'm learning. I'm excited to learn.
Yes.
It popped up on my TikTok feed, the gender swapped version. I was like, what is this? Because I was also, 2007, I think, right around the same time you were reading it, I was reading through it, and I was like, what is this? I thought this was a kid's book, and now I'm in love. Like, I want to read all these books.
Yeah.
And then watch all the movies, and then the movies, I was like, oh, okay, wasn't as good as I thought. Like, especially the last one, I'm like,
Nurr. I mean, when we get to CGI Baby, it starts to, you just really just have to go with it, but like...
Yeah, you're invested, but you can't, like, comment on it.
It was never surprising to me that middle-aged women fell for it at the time in such a big way, because... The first book is just a person asking a woman a lot of questions. So much of the book is him being like, what do you like? What's your favorite this? And it's like, God forbid somebody listen to me for 5 minutes. It was really like the pornography of somebody being present and interested in you. And it was no surprise to me at the time when I was in my 30s that every woman I knew from like 45 to 55 was like, this is the perfect man. He's just interested.
Is he 500 years old? Yes. 100 years old. Is that a problem?
Yeah.
Nah.
But he's paying attention, and he's like listening to the answers I give, as opposed to just, so yeah. But anyway, you will.
Yes.
I'm jealous you get to do it all over again and for the first time.
Oh yeah. For the first time. And then we have our producer, Christina, was a super fan. Like, I was in it, but she was in it. And she was about 10 years. She's 10 years younger than me. Yeah. So she was really caught up in it. So it's really a delight to have these different perspectives. And I love that you understand where we're coming from.
I mean, I think you're so right. It goes back to the thing you were saying about middle-aged people writing young adult novels. It's true. Like, when you're younger, you can do these things.
Yeah.
Yep.
But when you're older, we have to keep it in.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Before we let you go, is there anything you want to shout out? Any projects? Where can the listeners find you?
They can find the podcast at Love Letters, and I think they'll love this season. And if you've been broken up with, start with season one. I mean, I'm probably not as good at podcasting then, but it's a breakup season. And of course, it goes on from there. And you can find the column at Love Letters. So,
awesome. Well, also all the books.
Yes. You can go to MeredithGoldstein.com and truly explore the range of products you can buy and things you can see.
Perfect.
Yes. I always love when we have a guest and I'm the one at the end that's like, you also did this too.
Right. Sure.
I'm busy. What?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. You need to come back sometime where we just have pop culture nerd out.
Okay, excellent.
Do
we want you to back for at least a rewatch, maybe of Twilight, maybe the final finale? You
a should come for that. Down, a little action, a little Renette, a little Renesmee as a treat,
Yes, I can't wait. If you would like to find us, you can. You can email us at stephandiamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at Stuff One Never Told You. We have a Tee Public store and we have a book. Yes, you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff One Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.